All right, hello everyone. Happy, happy Sunday. Nice to be here. We've had a lovely week and a lovely weekend. As you guys know, last week was Miracles in the Mountains Conference, followed by a beautiful silent retreat at the Abbey. It just, the weather couldn't have been more perfect, and the scenery on the back 200 acres there is just incredible, beautiful farmland with mountains in the distance to look at, blue skies, yellow leaves. It was gorgeous. And then this weekend, the weather has just continued on. Ruby is still here with me, and Rosemary from Austria is still here with me, and Jacqueline is with us today. Yesterday, we went up to Cripple Creek, which is really beautiful, and then today we went down to the Arkansas River and walked, and it's almost like the silent retreat in one way is continuing on. So it's been pretty wonderful. My Facebook presence has still been a little on the light side. I haven't fully gotten back into, you know, everything. So that's nice. We're here now for the 7 steps to awakening, and we're going to begin with number 361. So Cheryl says she's been waiting patiently for me to get back to the 7 steps. That's okay. I'm sure I will. You know, right now I have guests here, so that's the reason I've been able to do so much with the 7 steps this year, is I haven't had guests. So I've been able to sit here for hours every morning in meditation and contemplation. But when guests are here, it's a little different. And Ruby leaves tomorrow, but Rosemary won't be leaving till Friday. So you might have to be a little more patient. We'll see what happens. But tonight we're beginning with number 361, and I'm giving you that are in the room, I'm giving you a direct link to number 361 in the journal now. For people who are listening on the radio, please go to RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA 7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. When you get to that website, just go up to the menu bar. You'll see a step 1, step 2, and step 3. Just click on step 2. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 361, because that's where we're going to begin. And what I would like to do before we begin is I would like to start with a little bit of silence. First, hold on, I'm going to put on some chapstick here. It'll sound silent to you, but I'm not actually in the silence yet, so it does not count as our official start. Okay, chapstick. All right. Now, hold on. We're not ready yet. I know you're eager, but how about a sip of Diet Strawberry Limeade? Very good. And now, let's sit back and have a moment of silence. Amen. All right, we maybe had a couple more people enter the room. So let me just post that link again. Here's the link to number 361 in the journal. And of course, before I get to number 361 in the journal, I'm going to read number 361 from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening, Right now, the series of quotes that I'm reading from come from The Supreme Yoga, which is actually another book. So here's what quote number 361 says. Only as long as the delusion of this world appearance lasts, is there this existence of the world as an object of perception. For those of you who don't know about the Seven Steps to Awakening, it's a book of quotes, over 1,500 quotes, divided into seven, you could call them objectives. And the first step, the first objective, was really teaching that the mind cannot awaken us, that the mind cannot awaken, nor can we really awaken through the mind. The second step, which is what I'm on now, is teaching that there is no world, that the world is not real, the body is not real, the universe is not real. So this again is quote number 361 coming from step two, the world is not real. Only as long as the delusion of this world appearance lasts, is there this existence of the world as an object of perception. So let's go ahead and look at the journal then, which is the link I gave you. The journal is basically what I wrote after contemplating the quote, which I just read. So here's what I wrote in my journal. In awakening, there is no thought and there is no perception. Therefore, there is no person self and there is no world. It's interesting because, you know, people use words differently. There's just no doubt about that. And so, you know, when we use the word awakening, the truth is awakening is just a word. It's not any more than that. And when people use the word awakening, they use it in a lot of different ways. You know, I've heard people use the word awakening to refer to the moment that they began the spiritual path. You know, they say, I had this awakening, and then I went and bought A Course in Miracles. And in other words, what they mean by the awakening is something jarred them into a realization that, you know, like maybe if they had been a Baptist before, you know, or an atheist before, or whatever, something jarred them into a realization that there was another spirituality, for lack of better words. There was another spirituality that actually was going to be more meaningful to them, and they completely abandoned whatever their previous spirituality or spiritual thinking was and started on this new path. And some people call that an awakening. There are other people who have experiences of non-duality. You know, A Course in Miracles calls it revelations. And although the split mind is still in place after the revelation, and there's still, you could say, work to be done after the revelation, the revelation was so incredible that it causes a change in how everything is understood. Even the Course, they read the words in the Course and they now mean something different as a result of the direct revelation. And some people call this awakening. There's also what the Course calls true perception, where you see only the real world, where you're listening only to one voice, the Holy Spirit's voice. But the Course says that even the real world is still a dream. But some people call this being awake. You'll hear the term awake in the dream. Or some people call it being enlightened, right? So that's another word, another way the word awakening is used. But in the work with the seven steps, awakening refers to awakening from the dream completely. Awakening out of perception completely. It would be the equivalent of what the Course calls heaven. So that's how the word awakening is used in my journal. That's how awakening is used throughout the seven steps. So even the real world, even seen with true perception, would not yet be awake. So that's what quote 361 in the journal 361 is pointing to. In awakening, there is no thought and there is no perception. Therefore, there is no person self and there is no world. So as we move forward with this journal, we can be clear on what the word awakening means. So it's not true perception. It's what the Course would call heaven. It's beyond perception entirely. And if you're in number 361, you can just scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 362. I will also post this link in the room for anyone who's not in the journal but would like to be in the journal. And Lynn says, hi, Ruby.
Yeah, she just called.
Oh, she called you to say hi, Ruby. She wrote hi, Ruby, here too. Okay. So we're moving on to number 362. This world appearance is experienced only like a daydream. It is essentially unreal. Again, this is the quote originally coming from the Supreme Yoga. This world appearance is experienced only like a daydream. It is essentially unreal. So we can now go to the journal, number 362. Imagine a daydream. In this daydream, you are a character of yourself, but not who you are. So the way this is being written, when it says not who you are, by the way, this is not being written from a perspective of truth. This is being written from a perspective of who you think you are. So in my case, it would be, you know, imagine a daydream where you're, you know, a character of yourself, but you're not Regina. Or if I was talking to Stephen, I would say, imagine a daydream where you're a character of yourself, but you're not Stephen, right? So that's what this means when it says you're not who you are. It's not being overly spiritual. It's talking directly to the person that you think you are now, all right? So imagine a daydream. In this daydream, you are a character of yourself, but not who you are. Maybe you are a hero or a person of extraordinary talent or beauty. Maybe you are a beggar and secretly evil or genius or good. Okay, so imagine yourself as some character, right? Some character of yourself. And go ahead and just do that right now. You know, we all know how to daydream. So just imagine yourself as a character. Now take that character into a scene and imagine its thoughts. You know, in that particular scene, if you are the hero, what would you be thinking? If you are the person of extraordinary talent or beauty, what would you be thinking? Or if you were the secretly evil beggar, or the secretly genius beggar, or the secretly good beggar, you know, what are you going to, in the scene that you're imagining in your daydream, you have this scene and your character is looking on at a scene, what is your character thinking? Right? Imagine that. Imagine your character's thoughts. Imagine your character's interactions. Who is your character talking to? What is your character doing? Are you the hero sword fighting? Or are you the, you know, or are you the hero that's giving away $1 million? Or, you know, what are you doing in this scene that you're daydreaming? What are your feelings? What are your responses to the environment and to what other characters in your daydream are doing? Go ahead and imagine that. Play with this for a while. Go ahead and let your daydream just kind of carry out a little bit. Watch the story of this you character unfold. Now, awaken. Stop thinking about the daydream. Where is this you character? Does it exist? Where are its thoughts and its world? Do they have any realness? This is the essence of your perceived you character and world now. They are not real. So this is using the idea of a daydream to show us just how unreal who we think we are is, how unreal Regina is, and how unreal Stephen is, for example. As soon as you wake up from the daydream, you know, you could have been sitting here daydreaming, staring out a window, daydreaming for, 10 minutes. You could have gone pretty far into this daydream in the mind, and a lot of things could happen, and your character could have had a lot of thoughts, and it could have been very dramatic and very emotional. But as soon as you stop the daydream, there's nothing there anymore. The characters don't exist, their thoughts don't exist, their actions don't exist. It doesn't matter if they were very good or if they were very bad. It equally does not exist. And what this says is, that's the way our seeming personalities and our seeming thoughts and our seeming life stories, that's the way they are actually. They don't exist. Every problem that we try to work out does not exist. Every way we try to improve this self, the self does not exist. And what we're trying to do to improve the self does not exist. It's like a daydream. And it's completely unreal. And in awakening, that is seen. So awakening is not an improvement of the self. Awakening is awakening from the self entirely, from the idea of the self entirely. So why don't we scroll down underneath the reply and comment area and click on number 363. Number 363. There is no cause and effect relation between the Supreme Being and the universe. So this quote that I'm reading to you now is coming from The Supreme Yoga, but it's quoted as quote number 363 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. And although words can never be direct truth, words are always just pointers. These words are getting as direct as words seem to be able to do. It's way beyond anything that the mind can really comprehend. There is no cause and effect relation between the Supreme Being and the universe. I'll read that one more time and then we'll look at the journal. There is no cause and effect relation between the Supreme Being and the universe. All right, let's look at the journal number 363. This is what I wrote after contemplating that quote. What remains unchanged remains unchanged. And what is imagined is imagined. There is no relationship between the unreal and real because the unreal is non-existent. I'll read that again. What remains unchanged remains unchanged, and what is imagined is imagined. There is no relationship between the unreal and the real because the unreal is non-existent. So what this literally means is that anything can happen to the body personality, anything at all can happen to the body personality, and the true self remains perfectly unaffected. It doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter how good per our judgment. It doesn't matter how bad per our judgment. The true self remains unaffected. awakening is a funny idea. Because in truth, there's no such thing as awakening. I don't think there's any way we can get around using that term or talking about that idea. But in truth, there is no awakening. Because the self, which is unchanged, which remains unchanged, has never fallen asleep. Therefore, it cannot awaken. It is constant. So even the idea of awakening is actually an illusion. It's similar to what A Course in Miracles says in the clarification of terms, where it talks about forgiveness as an illusion. But it's an illusion that points towards truth. The idea of awakening is an illusion. But it's an illusion that points towards truth, which is why it's used. But if the self is completely unchanged, if the self has never changed at all, then there really is no thing to awaken. So what number 363 is really pointing out is it's not like there's an I here who has fallen asleep and has imagined a world and imagined a lifetime and then can wake up from that. That seeming I doesn't exist. And like I said, this is something that the mind can't understand. So to even get the mind to try to understand it would probably just give us a headache or cause us to go into endless questions that can't be answered. But what I find is that even when the mind can't understand something, there's no way the mind can wrap itself around it. There's still something in me, and I don't know how to describe this, but there's something in me that not only accepts it, but knows it. And what's interesting is that part of me that not only accepts this, but knows it, can't communicate with the mind and explain it to the mind. That goes back again to there's no cause and effect relationship between the two. So this kind of takes us back to the ideas in Objective 1, Step 1 of the 7 Steps to Awakening. Mind can't do this. And at some point, if that awakening is to be experienced, whatever the heck that means, this awakening that doesn't actually exist, maybe it's better to say if true self is to be remembered. I don't know if that's any more real, but again, I don't know what else to say. But somehow, if this experience is going to happen, the experience that Jesus points to in A Course in Miracles, we have to let go of caring whether the mind understands or not. Because there's no relationship between mind and reality. And if there's no relationship between mind and reality, mind can never grasp reality. But the good news is, whatever happens to mind, whatever happens to body, whatever happens to personality, whatever happens in the world of dreams, never affects self. This is, you know, a part of why the Course can give you perfect innocence regardless of what, quote, crimes you seem to commit. Because whatever your, quote, crimes are, no matter how severe they seem to be in the world, and no matter how severely judged they would be by the world, no matter how many people on the planet Earth would agree that you are guilty, you'll turn yourself into Hitler for a moment in your daydream in the mind. As Hitler, everything you did did not touch the self. The self remains unchanged, therefore innocence is perfect. It's a daydream in the mind. And this is something that we have trouble fully accepting. I mean, we may, you know, get it in some moments, maybe even like right now, maybe in this moment it's being understood. But then when we get up and we walk away from these clarity moments, we forget again. We may do the tiniest thing and judge ourselves as guilty for that thing, and we have trouble letting go of that guilt because we think we've done something bad. We forget that there is no relationship. There is no relationship between reality and illusion. And therefore, self is never affected to any degree. It's impossible for us to do anything that would do anything to the self. What remains unchanged remains unchanged. And what is imagined is imagined. There is no relationship between the unreal and the real because the unreal is non-existent. So let's scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 364. And I will read number 364 from the Seven Steps to Awakening first. That was a little more sonic diet strawberry limeade. Very good. Number 364. The world is not seen in the supreme non-dual consciousness. Now, the supreme non-dual consciousness, for those of you who are not familiar with this language, we could say God. That would be a word that, if you're a Course student, you're familiar with, the Father. This would say the world is not seen by the Father. The world is not seen by God. I know we've heard that before. God does not even know about the world, about the illusion, right? Well, the supreme yoga, who I think far precedes A Course in Miracles. I'd have to look. I have the book on the shelf. I should try and figure out sometime what the dates are. It might even be under there. I don't know. But don't look for it, guys. I don't know where it is. But I think it comes many, many, many years before A Course in Miracles. It says the same thing. The world is not seen in the supreme non-dual consciousness. So let's look at the journal and see what I wrote after contemplating that. Number 364. When one is fully one's self, present in true being, with imagination absent, there is no world. Now, one thing that's interesting about the way I wrote this after contemplation, there was a time when, of course, I believed in a God that was separate from me, a heaven that was a place different than the world. And when I first started studying A Course in Miracles, those thoughts were still, you know, a part of my mind. And so when I first started reading A Course in Miracles, and it talked about God, or it talked about the Father, I was in no way thinking me. There was me, little me, Regina, and then there was God the Father. And if I read something that said that God did not know about the illusion or did not know about the world, I felt abandoned. I felt forgotten. I felt, you know, like, well, God is supposed to help me, Regina. And if God does not even know that I, Regina, am here in the world, how is God going to help me, Regina? And it seemed to be a sentence with it just created this broad gap between heaven and the world, two places that could not be crossed. In fact, it kind of reminds me now of in the Bible, I believe it's around Luke 16 or Luke 17 in the Bible, where Jesus tells the story of Lazarus and the rich man. And Lazarus, this is not the Lazarus he raised from the dead. This is a different Lazarus. This is a beggar with many sores on his body. And Lazarus laid outside of the rich man's gate and every day begged for food and was obviously in need. And every day the rich man in his wagon, his chariot, whatever, went in and out of his gate and never even looked at Lazarus. He gave him nothing. And what happened is the two men died very near to each other, very near in time. And Lazarus went to heaven. The rich man went to hell. And according to the story, as it's told in the Bible at Luke 16 or 17, there was a wide chasm between them, heaven and hell, that could not be crossed. And the rich man in hell begged Lazarus and begged Abraham, the father of the Jewish nation, the father of Israel, who was also in heaven, begged them for some kind of pity, begged them for even just a drop of water to cool his tongue. And what Abraham explained to him was there was a wide chasm that God had made between heaven and hell, and it could not be crossed. There was nothing they could do. It didn't matter whether they pitied him or not. There was nothing they could do to assist. Well, that's the way when I first learned through my studies of A Course in Miracles, when I first learned that God was not aware of the illusion, God was not aware of this world, that's kind of how I felt. Like this, there's this chasm that cannot be crossed between heaven and the world. But then...
Hey, Jamie, my love.
But then what happened for me, which really adjusted the way I understood this, when I was scribing NTI, when I was scribing NTI 1 John, which I'm turning to now, and if anybody has NTI nearby and you want to open it up, it's on page 443. What happened when I was scribing NTI... At NTI 1 John chapter 1 verses 5 to 7, page 443, this is what I heard and of course wrote down. God is light. In him there is no darkness at all. I'll read that part again because it's very similar to what we've been talking about when we say God cannot see the world at all. Or God cannot see the illusion at all. God is not aware of them at all. If he was aware of illusion, illusion would have to be in God's awareness, right? If God was aware of illusion, then illusion would have to be in God's awareness. Well, listen to what NTI says. God is light. In him, there is no darkness at all. Which means illusion can't even be in his awareness. God is light. In him there is no darkness at all. What then is God? Now listen to this, because this is what created the important shift for me. What then is God? God is an awareness that is pure. Because it looks on only that which is wholly true. This is God. And God, as an awareness, exists within you. This changed everything for me. Because before this moment, before I heard this sentence for the first time, God was separate from me. God was in heaven, I was in the world, and there was a chasm between us that could not be crossed because God wasn't even aware there was a world. Much like the story of Lazarus and the rich man. But this sentence says, God is an awareness, not a personality, not a person of some type, not even a divine person, but an awareness. God is an awareness that is pure, because it looks on only that which is wholly true. This is God, and God, as an awareness, exists within you. In that sentence, this imagined chasm disappears. Any separation between heaven and the world disappears, and any separation between God and what I am disappears. What this is saying to me, and again, I'm going to have to use a symbol because there's just no other way to do this, you understand. What this is saying to me is that within me, and I'm going to use the symbol of down deep, like down by the heart, or the gut, even deeper than the heart, down in the gut. There is still an absolutely pure awareness. What happens up in the head is all of this imagined thinking. But that imagined thinking in the head has in no way changed the pure awareness at the level of gut. Or heart, if you prefer heart. It's not that there's a chasm between the two. It's simply that one is imagined and one is real, and the one that is real is completely unchanged and has never got caught up in or involved in to any degree the imagined. And for me, this was very, very good news because this says that God, as an awareness, a pure awareness that only looks on that which is wholly true, right this moment exists in me. It's not like I have to somehow make it or earn it. It's present. It's always present. It's always been present. It will always be present. It cannot be lost. This is very different than the idea that I had at the beginning of the big chasm that separated God and I, and God wasn't even aware of where I was, otherwise able to help. Now God is right here always. Always. And in fact, there's no friggin' way, no matter how hard I try, that I could separate myself from that which is God. It doesn't matter what I think, it doesn't matter what I do, it doesn't matter how long I believe it and how long I act on it and how confused I am and how many people I confuse. I can't be separated from that. It's always here. Now that's a completely different understanding. And if we look back at the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, number 364, and read what the Supreme Yoga said, it says the world is not seen in the supreme non-dual consciousness. You see, supreme non-dual consciousness is that awareness that is God, that is in me, exists within me now, presently, never changed, absolutely changeless, not at all affected by imagination. And so number 364 in the journal says, when one is fully oneself, which means when there's no seeming, no apparent awareness or thoughts or beliefs anymore. There's no more imagination. In fact, that's how it continues. When one is fully oneself, present in true being with imagination absent. No more of the daydream, right? No more imagination at all. There is no world. Remember, A Course in Miracles says the real world is still a dream. Awakening from the real world, being that again, which is what we truly are, that God awareness that only looks on that which is true, that's awakening. That's what we call awakening. In awakening, there is no world. One thing I really appreciate about this clarity is there does seem to be a tremendous temptation, at least for some of us, that arises at some point, and it may arise and then fall away and then arise and then fall away, you know, throughout our experience. But at some point it seems that it's here. There seems to be some kind of a temptation to somehow say, I'm done. I'm awake. That's it. It's always been me. And all these words are okay. All of these words can be used to point to truth. But the problem is it's the ego that wants to say it. And the ego wants to say it while there is still a perception of a body, and there is still a perception of the world, and the ego wants to justify that perception. So that I can say, that's it, I'm here, I'm one, I'm one, I'm one of the ones that sees truly. I'm the enlightened one, I'm one of the ones. And what I love is this absolute clarity that pure awareness does not see illusion at all, not even the real world illusion. Now, the real world illusion is perceived, from what A Course in Miracles says, before the awakening to no perception happens. But in awakening, there's not even a real world. Having that clarity kind of nips the temptation to say, that's it, I'm here, I'm one of the awakened ones, I'm one of the enlightened ones, kind of nips it in the bud if we're willing to use self-honesty. No matter how happy I get in this world, no matter how okay I am with whatever happens to me in this world, if I'm willing to accept everything in absolute joy, I'm willing to love everyone without any grievance at all, no matter how real world it is, I'm still not awakened because I still see a world. That's pretty easy. A pretty easy criteria to hold to in self-honesty, and then avoid any temptations of acting. Acting is the key word here, awake. When one is fully oneself, present in true being, with imagination absent, there is no world. All right, let's go ahead and scroll on down and click on number 365. And I will read number 365 from The Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this is quoting the Supreme Yoga. Mind alone, by its thinking faculty, conjures up what is known as the body. No body is seen where the mind does not function. So this is really saying the same things, but instead of using that there is no world, it is saying there is no body. There can't be a body in true awareness, God awareness, self. Capital S self. Mind alone, by its thinking faculty, conjures up what is known as the body. No body is seen where the mind does not function. So, for lack of better words, in God awareness, where the mind does not function, because the mind is nothing but change, and God awareness has never experienced any change at all, therefore God awareness is completely unaware of mind, right, which constantly changes. In God awareness, there can be no body. All right, so let's look at number 365 in the journal. Mind and imagination are synonymous. And by the way, for those of you who are not familiar with the language that comes out of Advaita Vedanta, but you are very aware of A Course in Miracles, you know, A Course in Miracles talks about the mind of God. I'd like to just again say, I started with this, that words are just words. And I showed you several different ways people may use the word awakening. And I mentioned to you the way we're going to use the word awakening in seven steps is awakening from the world, right? But people do use it in other ways. That's what happens with words. Same thing with mind. When A Course in Miracles talks about the mind of God, mind is synonymous with awareness. Or, as we saw the Supreme Yoga earlier saying, supreme non-dual consciousness. Supreme non-dual consciousness is a term synonymous with the use of the word mind when A Course in Miracles says mind of God. The awareness, the God awareness that is pure in NTI, is synonymous with mind when A Course in Miracles says the mind of God. When number 365, which is really focusing more on the word mind, the way it is used in Advaita Vedanta language, when number 365 uses the word mind, it is talking about that which changes. In other words, it is not talking about God awareness or what we would call the mind of God, which is changeless. So mind is that which changes. So mind and imagination are synonymous. Mind imagines the house of fantasy, or the world. The house of fantasy is a term that's been used earlier in the journal. It's being continued in the journal. But it's synonymous with the world or the universe. Mind imagines the house of fantasy. In this house of fantasy, there is a body and a world. But the house of fantasy is mere imagination of mind and the same as mind, because mind is also imagination. So the body and the world are imagination, or they are mind also. Again, the words imagination and mind are synonymous. When one is fully one's self, present in true being with imagination absent or in God awareness, there is no body and there is no world. So, you know, the Course talks about the tiny mad idea. NTI Romans 2 talks about that as well. That tiny mad idea is the beginning of mind. Mind begins there, so we would also call it ego. Not individual personal ego, but more like a metaphysical ego. It's this ego that created the entire world or made the entire world. It's this ego that made all of the bodies, and it's this ego that literally made the seeming individual egos. They are a projection of this ego. That's mind. Metaphysical, but changing. Not God awareness. And it's all imagined. Just like if you were to sit here right now and start imagining a daydream. That first thought, you know, when you said, what if I was a beggar? But what if I was actually a genius and only acting to be a dumb beggar or an insane beggar? And what if I was doing this because I really wanted to study how humans react to the insane? And what if, and as you go into all of that, every bit of that is imagination. And if you go off further into that, and what if, you know, one day there's this person that comes up to me and this person seems to really understand the insane. this person wants to be helpful, and I decide to go ahead and just keep up the act and let this person be helpful, and I go home with the person, and then when I get home, the person starts to take advantage of me. They start to use me for sexual favors, or they use me as a sex slave, or they use me as just a domestic slave, keeping their house clean. You know, and now I don't know when to stop the act. I don't know how long I should continue pretending and studying this person, and how long I should keep up the act, because now I'm allowing myself to be a victim, and you just go on and on and on, and it gets more and more complicated. But from the first, what if it was imagination? No matter how complicated it gets, and even if you sit there and you experience these emotions, you're getting angry at your own daydream, at being a victim, and this, notice you created the trap for yourself. Every bit of it was not true. From the very first, what if? Well, that's like mind. From the very beginning of the tiny mad idea, from the very first, what if? Untruth. And just like I could go through this entire scenario as the genius beggar that's now got myself in this victim situation and not knowing how far to go with it, and I could do that whole thing sitting here in my chair and I'm never affected, truth is never affected by anything that seems to happen in imagination. Remember we saw earlier, there is no relationship, no cause and effect relationship between truth and illusion. Every bit of it's not true. The world that the mind made is not true. The bodies that the mind made is not true. The personalities that the mind made is not true. And just like if I was to wake up from the daydream, if Jasmine, you know, I'm sitting here daydreaming myself as this genius beggar in this complicated victim situation, and then Jasmine says, Mom, and I say, huh? And I turn my attention to her and forget the daydream, and it's completely gone. That's what it's like when we return to, whatever the words return to mean, when we return to God awareness that only looks on that which is pure. The entire dream is completely gone. Regina doesn't wake up. Regina, poof, does not exist. Just like the genius beggar, poof, does not exist. Yes, Jamie, did you want something? She just came over and stuck her nose under my arm and then pushed way up, kind of made my arm fly up in the air and then lay down. I guess she just wanted my attention for a moment. And this, of course, is, I don't even know how to say this, because there's no set of words that are coming to me that could be anywhere near accurate. But I'll just say these words with that understanding. This is the idea that is very difficult for us to understand. Somehow we think, somewhere within ourselves, that I am going to awaken. Can't happen. Just like the genius beggar can't suddenly become Regina who daydreamed him. He doesn't exist. I, Regina, cannot suddenly become God or awakened mind, awakened awareness, because Regina does not exist. What we're talking about here, what we're practicing towards, is something we can't even fathom with our mind. It's amazing. And yet at the same time, even though we can't even fathom it, something keeps pulling us towards it anyway. Most of us, when the true realization hits that we can't even fathom it, that there's no I that's going to awaken, when we kind of in any way get that and accept that, we keep going anyway. We keep doing the practice anyway, because something else is doing it. And what could be doing it when God awareness isn't even aware of the world? Who can explain this? The idea of the Holy Spirit was given to us to explain it. But that idea does not show up in all theologies. Maybe it can't actually be explained, except that it is. That somehow daydreams end. Maybe that's the only explanation. Reality is eternal, daydreams end. And maybe when we're experiencing this spiritual path and we're experiencing what appears to be an awakening, we're just experiencing the last part of the daydream. And so we imagine a self-awakening. Who knows? But what we do seem to know, if we trust these teachings at all, is as long as I perceive a self, no matter how enlightened this self seems to be, how at peace this self seems to be, and as long as I experience a world, no matter how much love I see in the world, I'm still not awakened. Because when I am awakened, whatever that means, to pure God awareness, there is no body and there is no world. So again, number 365, let me read it first from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Mind alone, by its thinking faculty, conjures up what is known as the body. We can see how that really is the same as a daydream, right? We conjure up the daydream. We conjure up the entire story through thinking. Mind alone, metaphysical mind, granted, not individual mind. Individual mind is also conjured up by metaphysical mind. I talked about this when I was teaching with Lynn on Friday. When most of us say, I created that, I projected that, we're dead wrong, because who we think we are when we say I is dead wrong. I'm not the character. The character doesn't project anything. The character in its thoughts are projections of the metaphysical mind. This is level confusion. Mind, metaphysical mind, alone by its thinking faculty, conjures up what is known as the body. No body is seen where the mind does not function in the pure awareness that is called God. And yet there's no chasm between me and God, because that pure awareness is present in me now, only covered up by mind, but completely unaffected by that which appears to cover it up. Number 365 in the journal. Mind and imagination are synonymous. Synonymous, completely synonymous. Mind imagines the house of fantasy, or the universe, you could say. Even that which is in mind before universe, whatever that would be. The tiny mad idea, for example, is a part of the house of fantasy. So even that which precedes universe, but is a change from God awareness, that's the house of fantasy. Mind imagines the house of fantasy. In this house of fantasy, there is a body and a world. But the house of fantasy is mere imagination, like a daydream. It is of mind, which is synonymous with imagination, and it is the same as mind, which is synonymous with imagination. So the body and the world are imagination or mind also. When one is fully one's self, present in true being, with imagination absent, there is no body and there is no world, because there is no imagination. So that's it for tonight. I will be back tomorrow, and we will begin with number 366. Everyone have a happy evening. Bye-bye.